It's Sunday morning. Time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. And I hope you enjoy this morning's show on Father's Day. It's the time of year when once a year we hopefully are treated well. For all of you dads out there, if you are going fishing or camping or boating or any of those good things with your family today, hope it's a great day. I know that as soon as I'm through with the show, I will also be doing that. I wanted to start off with what's just occurred in Illinois in the last week regarding the ill winds of Mother Nature, which have just absolutely inundated central and parts of southern Illinois with just huge amounts of rain. And this couldn't come at a worse time for not only for agriculture, as many rivers in central and southern Illinois are now well beyond their banks and having destroyed crops at a time of the year when it's very difficult to replant. But it comes also at a time of the year that's absolutely devastating to wildlife. We have quail on the ground, we have pheasant chicks on the ground, we have deer fawns on the ground, we have turkey poults on the ground, and we get this catastrophic flooding, arguably as bad flooding as we've had, particularly in the Kaskaskia River Valley, in many, many years. And it just comes at a time when the birds are helpless to get out of its way. So we are likely to see just a complete wipeout of, in the river bottoms at least, of turkey and pheasant and quail populations, and also will have a pretty good impact on deer fawns. So it's happened too frequently in recent years, and it's easy to point fingers at why this is happening, because this is largely a man-made event. We have caused this ourselves. And in the case of the Kaskaskia River Valley, all the arrows point to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers for what is really, at this point in time, questionable management of how they are managing the Kaskaskia River, which is the longest river in the state of Illinois, but which also has several large reservoirs on it. Most notably, it has Lake Shelbyville, and it also has Lake Carlisle. These reservoirs were put in years ago to be a source of recreation, flood control, energy, the whole works. There's a great question as to whether or not they have not, over the long term, done more damage to the state of Illinois than they did benefit, and I think we're seeing that right now. The Kaskaskia River in particular is so filled with sediment that the river's capacity to carry water has been greatly diminished. And if anyone takes a canoe down the Kaskaskia, as I have, and canoed for miles down this beautiful Illinois River, you will see that the river has been destroyed by the work of the Corps of Engineers. The river goes up and down like a yo-yo. Some days the river is 3 feet deep, and a couple days later it's 20 feet deep, and right now in places it's probably 50 feet deep. And so the river going up and down has not permitted the banks to stabilize at all. And there has been incredible erosion. And it's true of so many rivers in Illinois, but the Kaskaskia is the one right now which is being so badly impacted that there's no way for vegetation to grow on the sides of the rivers. And so every time the river comes up, it just washes away more of the bank. And the erosion has been phenomenal over the past decades. And that obviously gets carried downstream, and then the sediment gets deposited out, and the river becomes shallower and shallower. There are places now in the Kaskaskia River where if you had a 10-foot-long pole, you could push it into the bottom of the river and still not hit bedrock below or any kind of structure below. So that's what the river is carrying. The silt loads are phenomenal. The silting up of Lake Carlisle is accelerating at a rate that is far beyond initial expectations. The life expectancy of Lake Carlisle now is reduced from what it originally was, frankly, billed at when it was first built in the late 60s. And again, the Corps of Engineers is is, whether you like them or not, is not the issue. They are totally responsible for what is taking place on these reservoirs, the release of water, and the destruction of the Kaskaskia River. So the Kaskaskia is one of the most important rivers in the state of Illinois for wildlife. It's also a beautiful river, or once was, and there's a tremendous amount of agriculture that's dependent on it. And it's right now, from hilltop to hilltop, the entire alluvial plain in the Kaskaskia is underwater as I speak to you today. And in the middle of June, that's not supposed to happen. But it has, not only destroying agricultural crops, but as I mentioned a moment ago, just devastating wildlife. And the Corps of Engineers at some point needs to be accountable for how they're going to manage the Kaskaskia River. And I think the question comes up is, you know, the reservoirs that they've created, are they even viable anymore? But if they're viable, then what is the Corps of Engineers going to do below the reservoirs so they stabilize the stream flows? And this couldn't happen today. It shouldn't be allowed to happen today, but if the Corps wanted to build this reservoir today, they would be at Shelbyville or at Carlisle, they would be mandated to have downstream flow, stream bank work done, improvements so that the streams were not eroded. And this never happened. And so the Kaskaskia, as a result, is a terribly degraded river. And right now, we're seeing the consequences of that. So while we often look at the Corps of Engineers and wonder what they're doing, right before our eyes right now, we can see what the Corps of Engineers has done to the Kaskaskia River, and it's not a pretty picture. So moving from the Kaskaskia River on this Father's Day, I do want to talk about something that's just happened, which is absolutely fantastic news. And that is the Department of Interior, through the Fish and Wildlife Service, is working to open up public recreation on public lands, which is long overdue. And in particular, it's opening up public recreation on national wildlife refuges that over the past decade or so have lost much of their public hunting opportunity. And certainly, and this is not a political statement, but the previous administration, the Obama administration, was not friendly to the public's use for hunting and fishing of our natural resources. And many national wildlife refuges saw restrictive management and not an emphasis on the public being able to access them for hunting and fishing. This has changed. It's a sea change. It was recently announced that for public comment is the opening up of a number of national wildlife refuges to hunting and fishing that had previously been off limits, particularly for hunting. And one of the most significant ones is the Bear River National Wildlife Refuge, which is among the largest of the national wildlife refuges in the lower 48. The Bear River National Wildlife Refuge is being proposed in Utah, and it's one of the finest public hunting areas in the lower 48. They are proposing opening up numerous areas of the refuge to public hunting, which will increase recreation, increase commerce, and, in fact, will not have any detrimental impact on the management of the refuge, as the refuge is some 78,000 acres with plenty of areas that are sanctuary for birds for feeding and loafing and resting. And this is designed to provide more public hunting opportunity across America. This is going to happen, whether it's in Illinois, whether it's in Wisconsin, throughout the Midwest. Every single state is going to see, where possible, the public lands opened up more to public use and public hunting, with the recognition that this is one of the most important reasons that we have these public lands, is for the public to be able to utilize them. And certainly the Department of Interior on this score is absolutely to be credited, given credit to enhancing the ability of the public to enjoy its public resources. And in the case of our National Wildlife Refuge system, to open up hunting a number of areas where it hasn't been. So there's much more to come. I think it's really the beginning of it's taken about a year and a half to put these things into motion because of all the regulatory elements that are at stake here, and all the regulations that the government has put on itself and on us. But it's working its way through the system, and you're going to see a dramatic opening up of recreational opportunity, I think, in the coming months, and certainly within the coming year. I'll be back in just a moment with much more on the Great Outdoors. And when I do come back, I'm going to talk a little bit about a brief walk on the Oregon Trail and what it means and how one can do this. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America on WGN Radio 720, and first a message from our longtime sponsors in Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland, Chevrolet dealers.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Your host, Charlie Potter, here on WGN Radio on Father's Day, and I hope all you dads enjoy some time in the great outdoors today, wherever you may be listening with your family. I know that I plan to do that very shortly. Speaking of being outdoors, one of the most historic roads, not a road, it's called a trail, in all the world, but particularly in America, is the Oregon Trail, the trail that the pioneers used to basically cross the American West to reach what they hoped would be a better life, whether they stopped in Idaho, or whether it's where they stopped in Utah, or they stopped in Oregon, or they went all the way to the coast. It was the search for a better life. And spending some time in the American West, I recently had the opportunity to walk a bit of the Oregon Trail. And in doing so, one can only realize what an incredibly harsh environment this was, and how difficult it was to traverse parts of the American West. And when we read about the settlers going west, actually the pioneers before the settlers, when we read about the pioneers and the settlers going west, it's often a glorified image. I can tell you, it was tough as nails. The mortality rates were unbelievable. The death from disease, from the American Indian Wars that were taking place with the settlers coming west, in the area where I was, the Utter Massacre, which was the largest massacre ever of a wagon train on the Oregon Trail, took place right where I walked. So just for a moment, I want to take us back to that time, but also to the reason for doing this is you can do this today, which is why I'm discussing it and the magic of it. There are parts of the Oregon Trail that run through public land. A lot of it runs through private lands. It doesn't mean that the individual landowners won't give you permission to walk along the Oregon Trail, but the parts that run through the BLM and Forest Service land, particularly the BLM lands, are accessible, and those often paint the harshest picture of what our forefathers went through in crossing this country. In this case, I was in Idaho, and I was where in the region of where the Utah Massacre took place, and I tried to envision wagon trains going through these ravines and over these hills where I was walking and stumbling on 2 feet, and it really is impossible to imagine how a wagon train of people with mules and horses could traverse this terrain that is so inhospitable. And mind you, the individuals doing so didn't have a road map. They were on the Oregon Trail and may or may not have had a guide. They didn't know where they were going. They didn't know what was over the next hill or around the next bend. All they knew was that they were traveling through a country that was incredibly hostile to them, hostile from the point of view of being attacked by Indians, hostile from rattlesnakes, hostile from drought, hostile from the fact that it was just really rugged terrain. And to think of the courage it took and the determination it took to move those wagon trains across the American West, and in this case, the Oregon Trail in southern Idaho, it stops you. And as I walked the other morning, early in the morning along this trail before the rattlesnakes came out, and when I say a trail, there's some markers, the historical markers that say Oregon Trail. Other than that, there are ruts in the ground still from now 150 years ago and more. There are still the ruts in the ground from the wagon wheels that went over this hard earth. And there also are the not the actual hoof prints, but the indentations of where the cattle and the horses walked. But most of all, it's the ruts from the wagon trains themselves, the wagons. And if you have had the opportunity to look at any of the wagons, the covered wagons or the uncovered wagons that traverse the country, they were not an easy ride. Every single rock through you lurched you left and right and forward and back and up these hills. This was brutal, absolutely brutal way to cross the country. And as I walked the other morning for a mile or so through this rugged terrain, I actually couldn't even imagine what it would be like to be on a covered wagon or open wagon with terrible springs, trying to have the horses in front of you pull you through in areas where you were on a 45-degree angle in lots of places. It strikes me, and I've done this now a few times, of just the incredible courage people had and also their drive to find a better place. So if you want to go see any part of the Oregon Trail or walk any part of the Oregon Trail, it's easy to do. Just go to the Oregon Trail website, which is run by the U.S. government, Department of Interior, and you will find the areas that are accessible. And my only advice or thoughts are pick the parts that are the hardest, because that gives you the true impression as to what our forefathers went through in crossing the West. It's easy to look at a peaceful field of alfalfa and say, oh, the Oregon Trail went through there and there'll be a stake or two. It's quite something else to get into the rugged mountains and hills and realize that they went through these. And in doing so, they lived off the land, a land that did not, and often, many times, have much bounty to it. So on Father's Day, our forefathers went across the country on our behalf, and I walked in some of their footsteps last week, and it's something, if you have the opportunity to do it. It'll certainly get your mind thinking and give you a bit of American history that we can't get from history books or movies. We're certainly sitting in a lawn chair this afternoon on Father's Day. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back next Sunday morning with much more on the great outdoors. And there's a lot of breaking news on chronic wasting disease, which is becoming the national hot button on how we're going to manage our deer herds. And I'm going to talk about that next week. Thank you very much for being with me. Happy Father's Day. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.